Concepts podcast. My name is Joseph Johnson, and I'm joined by Jeff Moyer from DC Sports Training, as well as Dr. Michael Yeses of Sports Training as well. And we're going to kind of continue in this vein. We've been talking about the preparation of athletes, you know, at the high school level. Then how does that change and evolve at the college level? And now ultimately kind of talking about how do things work at the pro level, and what ways can things be improved at the pro level, and what are we seeing in today? And one of the things that we've talked about, and I think a lot of people have seen for this 2013 season, is there was a really large amount of injuries, season-ending injuries, and many of them non-contact. And the question is, like, well, why? Why is that the case? Is it preparation? Is it poor technique? Is a combination of different issues? This would be one of the things we want to talk about, and also kind of talk about, you know, how can things be improved even during the season in terms of maybe looking at skill execution and what could be done there. So we have one of the world's experts in this area on technique and preparation. So, in fact, as always, it's a great resource to kind of examine these issues with a more critical eye and determine what are the problems, what things are can be changed, maybe what things should be done away with completely. There's a lot of different things out there that I think should be examined and questioned all over again. So, Doc, as always, love to have you with us. What do you see, you know, there's a couple of different issues there. What do you see as, what jumps out to you when you look at the NFL, what jumps out to you as being one of the most, I guess, deficient things that like, is the most obvious that jumps out to you first?
An excellent question, and I often think about it. It's almost like a dichotomy. I see some phenomenal play in terms of execution of a skill, especially some of these quarterbacks, the way they can more or less thread a needle and get it to the receiver when there's hardly any room for error. And on the opposite end, I see some of the simplest things that these athletes cannot execute. Like, for example, here's a running back coming at a defender, and he stops, and he takes a fake to the right, goes to the left, and he's free. They fake these guys out like it's going out of season. I say to myself, what kind of preparation are they doing? Simple tackles where they have the arms around the guy, and he breaks loose. They miss tackles. They even miss the receiver's missing some passes right to him. And the ball bounces off his chest. They not learn how to catch the ball. So, now we see some of the poorest play. We see some of the most phenomenal play. Even some of the receivers, the way they snag some of these balls. So I think we see some really high-level execution, which is what we should see throughout pro football. But we don't see it on the basics. The only real improvement I see is with the quarterback and the receivers. And there are a few backs. Now, when I make these generalizations, I'm not talking about every single person in the pros. And I think, well, we can get into the reasons for it. I can give you several reasons why I think this is occurring. They spend a tremendous amount of time throwing a ball with the quarterback where he throws and throws and throws and they run these patterns so often that you can't help but get better, even if the quarterback's got terrible technique. Like, for example, Rivers at San Diego Chargers. You think he was a shot putter at one time. He throws the ball as though he's a shot putter. Yet he gets the ball to his receivers most often. Well, that indicates that he must be doing hundreds and hundreds of throws in practice. Get this down pat. But if he doesn't have time, and with his throwing technique, he's in trouble. So we see this also. But the do not, the pro teams, from what I can tell, because of the execution, are not working on basics. They have, athletes have never really learned how to tackle and to prepare them physically for the tackling. Or have they learned how to cut quickly? I can count on one hand how many running backs really have excellent cutting technique. The others just make round corners, or they cut on the wrong leg. Every time an athlete, a running back, falls down, oh, he slipped. You know, you hear the commentator, well, he slipped. He should never slip. That's why he got cleats on. But why do they slip? Because they're cutting incorrectly. So anyway, I'll just leave it here and see what your reactions are.
I think one of the things that's interesting, and Jeff, please jump in here because I know you have a lot of experience as a football coach as well. They spend an inordinate amount of hours on studying film, going over plays. I mean, you know, there are always tales of coaches spending, you know, 20-hour days, working on all this stuff, strategy and everything else. What is, in your opinion, Jeff, how is that time spent? I know you've been around it a decent amount. How do you see how the time is spent, and then what would you say would be the a better use of that time?
If we're talking throughout a day, a lot of time during the day. So, for instance, if we're talking collegiate, aside from the kids being in class, there's a lot of film sessions. There's a lot of whiteboard. So there's a lot of tactics and strategic going on the field. Just from my observations and having been a coach and gone to a lot of conventions and, visiting other coaches, honestly, there's a lot of drills that go on that do not replicate what happens on the field. They are based off a mirroring, but even then they can be scrutinized for not replicating what goes on the field. So Doc was talking about cutting. A lot of times with running backs, drills that you see, I mean, from the Lombardi days till now, doing ladder drill or tire drills, stepping through tires, picking up their knees, doing ladder drills, doing cone drills. Everything's based off of cones. Those drills are very heavily used as opposed to working more on first the technique and then the reaction drills of that technique based off of a stimulus, based off of a linebacker, based off of whatever it is. But building off the technique first, the technique that they teach generally is, again, can be scrutinized to an extent. A lot of times with wide receivers, they just take for granted growing up through the ranks, going from modified or Pop Warner to modified to JV ball to varsity onto college and pros. If you can catch, if you have good hands, then you're a wide receiver or a defensive back or a skill position rather than teaching how to catch, the hand placements, they teach the basic, diamond with the hands, but that's only permeant to certain positions that you're catching the ball. That doesn't, you don't use that hand technique with everything. So they don't teach these things from the very basic. It's just if you have good hands, go play wide receiver. If you can run fast, if you're quick, then go play a skill position, but they don't work on these things. It's all kind of based on selection of, growing up and then, and also body composition plays a big part into that as well. Generally, kids who even have good hands or can throw but are larger will be stuck on the line or they'll play offensive tackle. I've seen too many drills, long story short, seen too many drills that could be certainly scrutinized based off of some of Doc's work for quarterbacking, for instance. Quarterback coaches will teach a lot of throwing drills, from various positions on a knee, in standing positions with their feet in different positions, which, don't get me wrong, is important to do because the quarterback does not always throw it in the ideal foot position, but they don't hardly work on the body action, or they'll just use general cues of getting your hips into the throw, but they don't know how to teach that. They don't know how to strengthen that. It's just a cueing more than anything. You know, I've seen too many times these quarterback experts will have their quarterbacks go on sand and work on doing pass drops and stuff in the sand, or go in the water where they're going against waves for resistance. But if you were to look at the mechanics, it completely messes up their mechanics. I mean, theoretically, it's great because it's some resistance and it's tougher. But does it improve their mechanics? No, it ruins their mechanics. And Doc, I'm sure, can attest to a lot more than that. But yeah, I think as a coaching profession, having been a football coach at the collegiate high school level, coaches would certainly benefit from having an understanding of biomechanics and also motor learning. That's just my opinion. Doc, what do you have to think?
Yeah, no, I think you're right on, Jeff. And I think, see, this really begs the whole question. We need more education. We just have to learn how to do these. See, there's nothing in a university curriculum or in a coaching world that teaches these basic skills. See, now, at one time, you guys are too young for this, back in the, well, even in the 80s, 70s and 80s, all your football linemen were duck putters and discus throwers on a track team. Running backs, defenders and whatnot, were typically sprinters on the track team. Now, with the track coaches, they had, no, it wasn't the greatest, but they still had fairly good technique. A good sprinter had to have fairly good technique. You can't be a good sprinter with poor technique. So the football teams had some good players who were able to execute the skills. Then football didn't like the idea that they couldn't use these athletes in spring ball. So they said, we're going to take over and do everything. And that's what helped kill all the track and field programs in this country. Right? An athlete had to make a decision. Now, football's got the money in it. Track and field doesn't. So the athletes migrated more to football. But football coaches don't have the knowledge of what it takes to make a good sprinter. They only want to buy or recruit the athlete who's fast. And I think, well, Jeff, you were telling me the other day about a study that was done at some, where was it again? But anyway, they analyzed their program and found out that after 4 years, from a freshman to when I graduate, they weren't getting any faster. They were getting slower. See, now, why is this? Why were they getting slower? See, they're not examining why. And their conclusion was, well, we have to recruit faster athletes. Because it's genetic. No, it isn't genetic. Everyone has to learn and be trained on how to execute the skills, whether it be running or jumping or cutting or leaping. You have to know the skill. And how do we teach the skill? Many coaches will say, now, come on, execute a sharper cut. Well, this doesn't mean anything. The athlete's saying to himself, okay, I'm going to execute a sharper cut. How do I do it? What am I supposed to do? I think I'm already executing a sharp cut. So coaches have to tell them exactly what to do. Even a runner, how can I get faster? They have to show them how to do this action. Get that knee drive out there. Get the leg out there. Drive it back hard. Whatever it might be. But coaches have to be educated in terms of what constitutes good, effective technique execution. You don't have this. So until we have it, this problem is going to exist. And going back to the original premise of the injuries, number one factor that I see is poor technique execution. Number one, if you have incorrect technique, you will get injured in time, regardless of the sport. But regardless of the skill that you're executing, you have the technique, and of course you need the physical abilities that are related or specific to that technique, now you're not going to get an injury. General conditioning does not cut it, and this is what the teams are doing, even in the pros. They're not doing specific training. It's geared to the skill execution. They're just pumping iron to get stronger. But as you're getting stronger, as many studies are now showing, you're also getting slower. And then the stronger you get, and because you're getting slower, you're also losing some flexibility. There are many negatives, and this is one of the reasons why they might be receiving all of these injuries. You're getting too strong. It sounds ironic. It's almost like a catch-22 situation. It's true. You need an ample amount, but then you need the skill execution. See, they're doing the strength, but they're not doing the skill. What do we use this strength for? Nobody's looking at this. You just think, oh yeah, I'm going to build a stronger athlete. He's going to be better all around, and he's not going to get injured. Wrong. We have to change the myths. Okay, I didn't mean to go on there, but what do you think about those?
Well, what I'm hearing is really is that the coaches, while very schooled in strategy, spending countless hours studying and going over stuff, really at the fundamental level, never really looked at the more adept at allocating talent towards a position as opposed to developing talent once it's there. And it's kind of a what you see is what you get. So if a guy comes in really fast, that's where he stays, and he may improve in the technical, strategic aspects of it, but certainly not in the technical part of the skill. Correct me if I'm wrong, Doc, I think maybe just the underlying idea is that there's no real scientific training for the position coaches, or there's no one on the team. Now, a lot of people would say, well, maybe the strength and conditioning coach, but, he really doesn't have that background, and it's not his fault because he doesn't have, a lot of times his degree is in kinesiology, or he's a strength and conditioning coach specialist. And he has some knowledge, but he doesn't really have biomechanical knowledge. And could you kind of touch on that real quick, Doc?
Okay, sure. It's biomechanical. I like to break it down because when you think in terms of biomechanics, many people start thinking, oh, no, that's high, deep science. You're going to be a rocket scientist to understand it. No, it's not really that complex. Think more in terms of technique analysis. This is what the biomechanics should entail. How can we analyze the technique? I'm looking at my runner, or let's say a running action or a cutting action. When I look at it, what should I look for? Are there any actions that he's executing that might cause injury? How can I make him faster or quicker? What exercises can I do to make him faster or quicker? How can I improve it? So we're looking at the technique aspect. And as we look at technique, we know it's related to physical abilities. So if he's not doing a particular action, like for example, if he has a very weak knee drive, well, now we can do an exercise to improve the force of that knee drive. So once we understand what he's doing, not incorrectly necessarily, but what he's doing that is not optimal, it could be better, then we have to come up with an exercise to make it better. And a lot of this information is already available. For example, in the explosive running book, the plyometrics book and whatnot, we have many of these exercises already worked out. Many years in the making, but they're available. So coaches have to make themselves, have to avail themselves of this information and then apply it. That's the bottom line. It must be applied.
So one of the things that I would say is, and you, once again, correct me if I'm wrong, is that biomechanics and technique analysis, like what you're talking about, is kind of a static thing now. There's not a lot of new stuff. So it's not like it's an ongoing process of technique changing or the ideas about it. It's relatively static. Am I correct in that, Doc?
Yes, it's evolving a little bit, but basically, see, the basics a quarterback, how does he produce force? Well, weight shift, hip rotation, the roll of the two, the shoulder rotation. These are static. We already know all of this. This is not going to change. Can't say I'm going to make a great quarterback just by having him stand on his head. No. So we know the basics of what constitutes good running, throwing, jumping, hitting technique.
So what you're saying, though, if this can be learned by, let's say, a quarterback coach, the technique I'm throwing, this can be learned by him and not a terribly massive, you know, with this overwhelming information. It can be learned and not in a terribly, you know, like a long time. You know, it's something that can be, obviously not going to be learned today, but it can be learned, and it can be kind of woven into this quarterback coach, for example. Quarterback coach, it can be woven into his education. Am I hearing that correctly?
Yes, yeah, and quite simply. In fact, I'd like to have Jeff step in here, because I've been helping him a little bit with one of his quarterbacks that he's been working with. So maybe, I know Jeff didn't have a strong background at the beginning with what constitutes good throwing technique. So maybe you could address this, Jeff, in terms of both learning what constitutes good technique and application of exercises to improve, as well as the analysis.
Yeah, I mean, from my original background as a sport coach, as a former athlete playing quarterback, and then as a sport coach coaching quarterbacks and offensive coordinator, first, you know, I know the tactics of quarterback. I understood that before working with Doc. I know what, you know, I believed what was a good throwing motion before, but working with Doc, that really helped me understand why these actions occur, how they occur, the sequence of their occurrence to get good throwing technique. And then from there, how to tie them together with exercises, both general and specialized, to improve the throwing. And then what also, this kind of ties in the two professions that's really helped, you know, Dr. Bondarchuk formed a classification of exercises, specialized exercises, that works as a continuum, tying the general to the competitive exercise based on similarities. And then what, Doc, you've done a great job. See, this is the physical preparation coach in me coming out. Doc, you've done a great job as tying those together towards the technique for throwing, for the quarterback. I believe, it is my belief, once a quarterback coach understands that, can work either with the physical preparation coach or himself do the training with the quarterback, taking that knowledge then to the tactical side and coming up with exercises that work on a continuum, one, to reinforce the proper technique, and then two, tying it into what the tactics and what the quarterback has to do on the field, I think would be huge, rather than just doing mindless quarterbacking drills that actually go against the proper mechanics, and then, you know, expecting the quarterback to perform with proper mechanics. So you got, you know, competing motor skills going against each other. But Doc's knowledge and his help with me and the quarterbacks that I've trained, it's been a huge advantage for me to, coupled with my background as a quarterback coach, to prepare these quarterbacks for the season. It's just been huge, and I continue to ask Doc questions and go to him for advice for throwing athletes and proper technique and stuff. But yeah, it's been an invaluable service to me, and I recommend it to any sport coach and preparation coach, you know, to get in contact with Doc and read his materials, build a better athlete, talks about the throwing mechanics, goes through that you know, a bit. Doc, you have some articles done by the National Strength and Conditioning Association dealing with the throwing, but then it's also how to teach it, which that's been the biggest lesson for me. You know, knowing the mechanics is great, but then how to teach the mechanics is where I really enjoyed learning from you. So That's all I got to say about that.
Practical examples of where we, you and I both have seen this, Jeff, and the work, and that I think the key is this is something that can be learned. You don't need a PhD in biomechanics. You can learn technique. You don't need to know all of the deeper science necessarily, but you can learn what's relevant to your position. And I think that's a key that other people should take out of it. It can be learned. And while it's not, extremely simple, it's not, you don't have to have this deep scientific background in that field. Doc, what would you say, bringing a coach along, how long do you think it would take for someone to, if he's working with someone else that's got a skill in the area, how long do you think it would take for someone to at least have a basic grasp so they can start using it in a practical setting?
Well, really, just in one season. I have to think long range on this. You can learn enough at the very beginning where the athletes will see appreciable improvement. This is only the beginning. See, and after they see that initial improvement, and that doesn't take long. Within a few months, it's amazing the changes you can make. I didn't say days or weeks. Have to give it a little bit of time, because when you're learning something new, it takes a while before it registers or becomes ingrained in the athlete's neuromuscular system. This is where I think many coaches fail. They tell the athlete, okay, this is what I want you to do. Do it. They practice it for a day. Okay, great. That doesn't mean it was learned. It's the next day or the day after. It's forgotten. You have to repeat it and repeat it and repeat it. It takes hundreds, if not thousands, of repetitions before that technique becomes ingrained. And you have to, change one thing before you can change another. You can't just give an athlete and say, I want you to change these five things. No, you're not doing this, you're not doing this, you're not doing this, you're not doing this. Work on these. Well, you can't. But once you develop one or two changes, you make them, then we go on to the next change, then we go on to the next one. And each one is honing that skill and making it better and better. So this is why it's a long-term project, but you're going to see appreciable improvement right from the very beginning. That's going to be very significant. And after the first year, you see this improvement, then he plays, he's looking great. Second year, we go a little bit further. But we have to take a little time out in all training sessions. We have to be working on technique. Because, see, we're hung up on more and more strength training. But strength and additional strength changes technique. This is why we get stronger. It enables you to do other things. And it's changing how you're capable of doing something. So we have to give it enough time to make the change and then work on technique as we get stronger. And you have to work on technique throughout the life of the athlete. Not just when they're young or not just when they're old. Wow, it's a constant process. If you're not doing this, you're never going to develop the best athlete.
So, I think the main thing to take away from this is that in terms of execution skills, this could be a part of the football coach's education. And I think maybe one of the problems is that, we don't have a formal system for that. We don't have a 1-year, 2-year football coach program where the coach learns some of the science and he can apply it. And that's talking physiology too. So they would understand, hey, we're pushing the athlete too hard. We need to scale it back. They would understand those concepts. In the terms of technique, we got to look at this guy's technique. He's probably going to run into an injury. Or we got a younger guy. Let's build this guy from the ground up. Let's start teaching this technique. And that way it would filter down to the lower level. So I think the main thing is that coaches are, they don't have an education. education that's science-based towards this sport. Everything is based upon modeling. You know, who was good before? What did they do? Let's model that. And they do that in terms of the players and the coaches. They kind of, it's all, none of it is streamlined. None of it is, there's no standards. There's no principles like there are in science for football. I mean, there maybe are some that are spoken or unspoken, but there's no real, like, ones that have been tested through scientific methods to hold up. And I think that's probably the biggest problem that we run into. And real quickly, we don't want to go too in-depth, but also, you know, we talked earlier about a lot of these guys getting hurt. We're one of the other problems. The technique is definitely number one. And then the workload is too high. And like I touched on just a few minutes earlier, you know, we're pushing them too hard. More is not always better. And so, Doc, if you could just comment on that real quick. But even if we're working on technique, there is a limit to how many times the athlete should throw. Let's say if he's a quarterback, or how many times you should have him, you know, going working on his cutting, how much time's involved. There's a limit to that, and even though if you're working on good stuff, it can be negative because of the volume. Could you comment on that real quick?
Sure, and that's an excellent comment, mainly because too many repetitions, you know, you get fatigue setting in, and you're not going to have good execution. And coaches think, well, I'm going to work on his technique when he's tired. You can't do that. You have to do when the athlete is full of energy, when he's ready to go. And when he has his energy, he can throw well with good technique. Once there's any deterioration or a little sign of fatigue, you have to stop the training. And then if he's that out of shape, he's going to be so tired that he can't throw well, and there's something wrong with your conditioning. An athlete, especially a quarterback, you know, he's not throwing for the duration of the game, or the other team is throwing for a while. He's resting. We should have plenty of time to recover and be fresh enough to throw the ball or to hand it off. Well, you're not going to have, you know, a typical quarterback throwing 100 times a game, but yet in practice they'll throw well over 100. They never do it in a game. So, do too much, and we get the fatigue factor. So, you can't teach anything, or the athlete can't learn anything, but he's in a fatigue state. So, this has got to be paramount. I think the workloads, you know, they push him and push him. Well, we got to get in shape. More wind sprints. Come on, I want your tongue hanging out. More, more, more. Well, the athlete is so depleted, he never recharges fully for that game. And we've done studies, you've done studies, other people have done studies showing that when this happens, when we keep pushing the envelope in terms of how much the athlete can do, because the coach is going to look at him and say, boy, he's really macho. Look at him. He was capable of doing it. He was dying, but he kept going. Now, then the game falls apart. Then they wonder why, and when he's tired and fatigue starts setting in, there's your injury. He's not able to execute it the way he should. His technique is deteriorating. His physical abilities are not commensurate with what he's trying to do. There's your injury. So this is where the workload comes in and plays a very important part. Got to cut down on the workload in season. What's most important in season? The planing, improving the planing. Not getting stronger. It should already be strong. Why do we need these strength training programs and wind sprints and everything in season? They already should be ready. And if they're not ready, that means there is a breakdown in how they're prepared prior to the season. Okay, I can go on, but I think you got the gist of it there.
Yeah, I think the thing to take away is this, I think, for the folks is that, you know, there is a limit to what an athlete can absorb in a day. And I do a lot of consulting with colleges, and we run into this a lot all the time. And the one thing that I hear over and over and over again, well, we want to develop mental toughness. And my response is, you know, mental toughness is not developed through work, and never letting up. I said, you're going to set the guy up for an injury is what you're doing. You know, mental toughness can be trained in other ways. And in my opinion, I would rather my athlete be good more so than have to be mentally tough, because mentally tough means you're not that good, you're having to fight uphill battles all the time. I'd rather just win, and then we'll worry about the mental toughness later. And I think that it's taken on a life of its own. So a lot of the coaches say, well, I want them to be able to do it when they're exhausted. But what they don't realize is you can't train a skill so it turns up when they're exhausted. There's different conditions that are involved. And so it's not possible for that to happen. When an athlete executes it right when he's tired, that's just kind of luck of the draw. It's not because you trained that specifically. That doesn't happen. So I think one of the keys are here, get a little more technical knowledge about what's actually involved. And like Jeff talked about earlier, you know, the ladder drills, the bone drills, most of them don't apply. They don't have carryover. And so let's look at what really happens, and then what do we need to do to develop that skill. And then let's get in, get it done in a reasonable amount of time. And normally, like skill development, we talk 20 minutes, and then, you know, you're going to have longer practices than that. But when you get real technical, you're really working on some specific skill, about 20 minutes or so, and then the athletes will start to lose concentration. But we need to be more precise. I think this is the way that we've talked about with training too, Doc, is let's be precise. It's going to get done what needs to be done. That's going to be optimal and maximal return on investment, and then go home. You don't need four-hour practices. There's no proof that it helps. Talent is what wins. At the low level, high school, college, pro, talent wins. So let's develop talent. Do you guys have any comments about that? Because I'd love to hear what you have to say, you know, as we close up this podcast. I'd love to hear what you guys have to say about that.
Jeff, why don't you go ahead? I think you're right on, Joseph. You know, you hit the main parts, and I think it's a matter of waiting until the coaches come around to more or less accepting this philosophy and learning more on how to, you know, do things more effectively without the fatigue factor.
Yeah, I agree. You made some great points. You know, that the less is more added that, you know, we've been talking about for a long time. I mean, you never know what's the right amount until we start with the least amount and then work up, rather than, you know, start with too much and then have to back down, or just assume that too much is not enough and add more. And then you run into, that's where you run into all your issues. But, you know, it's a very, the sport coach profession is a very dogmatic profession, and you know, it's going to take a lot of open-minded people to listen to this and try to practically apply it to see some changes. But you know, I hope that that happens.
Doctor, any thoughts on that as well?
Oh no, I kind of agree, and I think it's a matter of. Well, the education, that's the big thing. We need more education for these coaches. It's not their fault where they're at. It's the main criteria used to be a coach today is, have you played, who have you played for? Not what you know. This is, we got to change this concept.
Well, you know, in a world where sports now literally is a multi-billion dollar industry, and I mean multi-billion dollar per team, you know, we have multiple pro teams now that are evaluated at over $2 to $3 billion. The Los Angeles Dodgers, obviously, you know, broke all kinds of records when they were sold for $2 billion just past year. With all of the money being put out, most other clubs that are in these billion-dollar categories are going out and getting highly skilled people who have refined their skill sets on a real high level with high-level education. Ironically, in sports, we hand the keys to the multi-billion dollar organization with someone who may have, you know, recruiting ability, they may have salesmanship ability, they have great charisma, they know everything about the strategy of football, but then there's certain components they know nothing about, which is really ironic. You know, it'd be like a corporation being great in many different ways and then have an accounting department that is non-existent. It doesn't make sense. You know, it would be obvious. We need to take care of that. And in football, basketball, doesn't matter what sport it is, you see that this is not really being addressed properly, not in the same way, especially with the amount of money that's on the line. So I think at some point, hopefully, this will start to to evolve, and we'll start to put more emphasis on the education of the coach, specific to the things that he needs to know. So hopefully, you know, everybody can kind of take away from that. Look at build a better athlete. Look at the biomechanics, kinesiology of exercise. These are books that at least start to explain the skills that are involved in you. You can at least start this process of learning and picking out things that are wrong so that you can do your athletes, you know, a greater service. So with that, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate you guys always being involved and answering the questions, Doc. And thanks for your input as well, Jeff. And we'll be talking to you guys next week. Thank you.
Very good. Thanks.
Thanks.